And welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moscowain. The good news is the digital divide has shrunk to some degree. More American families have access to technology than ever before. The bad news is that as access has increased, so has time wasting, especially for children. Studies show that kids are spending anywhere from 7.5 to 11 hours a day in front of some type of screen, TV, computer, video game, cell phone, MP3, and most of that time is not devoted to educational pursuits. Researchers say it's worse for kids from low-income families who are less likely to be directed to educational and interactive content. So this hour, we're looking at the side effects of screen time on children and what's being done to help. Joining us are Dr. Kevin Clark, director of the Center for Digital Media, Innovation and Diversity, and a professor of instructional technology at George Mason University. Dr. Clark, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy.
And also with us is Vicki Rideout, president of VJR Consulting, a media research firm focused on children and health. Vicki is the former director of the Kaiser Family Foundation's Program for the Study of Media and Health. And Vicki, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks very much, Tracy.
So let me begin with you, Vicki. How did researchers come up with these numbers? We're talking about an average of somewhere around 9 hours a day that children are spending in front of some type of a screen or another. How did they arrive at that figure?
Well, we've conducted a study for the past 10 years that has looked at the amount of time that kids spend with all different types of media. And we do a methodology where we pull a representative sample of kids. We give them a written questionnaire that asks them about what they did the previous day. We give them a 7-day-long media use diary that they complete at home. And what we find in that study, and we've done it at 3 different points over the past 10 years, is that today, on average, kids consume about 10 hours and 45 minutes worth of media content a day. Now, that's not just screen media. That's television. That's everything they do on the computer. It's music. It's reading. It's video games. It's averaging out all their movie time. Because a lot of that time they're using more than one medium at the same time, so they might be, listening to music while they're surfing the internet or something like that, the actual number of hours out of the day when you discount that multitasking is about 7.5 hours a day that kids, on average, between the ages of 8 and 18, are spending using some kind of media in a typical day.
It's a wonder that you could get them away from the technology long enough to fill out the diary.
We did it in a classroom at school, so they were a captive audience.
those are really amazing numbers, and they've just gone up and up over the years. I mean, there was a point, Vicki, where researchers were saying it just can't get any higher than this, and somehow it has.
Yeah, we actually did really think that we had hit a plateau. Because the first time we did the study was in 1999, and in terms of the total consumption that kids had was about 7.5 hours, and the total amount of hours out of the day was about 6 hours that they spent using one or two media at the same time. The next time, 5 years later, it was still about 6 hours and 15 minutes a day that they spent using media. They were cramming more media into that time because they were spending more time using two different media at the same time. But we thought, okay, that's it. They have about 6.5 hours, 6.25 hours a day that they can spend using media. Well, then the next time we did it in 2009, suddenly it was 7.5 hours out of their day, and they were cramming tons of time of media consumption into that time because they were spending so much time using more than one medium at a time. And what happened in that period to allow that is just that there's so many more platforms to consume media on, and so many of them are mobile. So it opens up all these new hours of the day when you can consume media. If you're on the bus, if you're walking down the street, I mean, anything, if you're sitting in class, I mean, there's just so many opportunities for kids. There's so many things they can do on their cell phones and their iPods and their iPads that it's just virtually around the clock.
Kevin, I know that you are working with young people to redirect some of their energies around technology, but for other children and the kids that we're talking about in this survey, what are they doing online? What kinds of things are they using this digital media for?
From what I've been able to look at the data and see is that a lot of the students are using this technology to look at videos, play games. So it's just interesting mix of using 21st century technologies to do 20th century activities. So you're using an iPad to watch a video when, you know, years ago we could have just sat and did that with a VCR. We're also seeing the emergence of mobile and online gaming, and so that allows kids to play games wherever they are. Now they're not tethered to a controller or to a console, and so that's adding to the amount of time spent. Add on top of that, mobile phones and communication devices, it's easy to see how you can get that 7.5 hour number.
And how about, you know, Facebooking and tweeting and all those kinds of things?
Yeah, and that's again, the mobile and the social aspect of it. You know, typically the age is supposed to be 14 in terms of, at least for Facebook, but we know that a lot of kids are on these tools, even though they may not meet the age requirement. And kids are really finding this as a way to continue the connection with their friends. Yeah. So the school day is not just the place where they congregate and talk with their friends. Now it's extended to after school and on weekends.
Vicki, were there any gender differences with this? You know, boys or girls spending more or less time as a group with this technology?
Yes. In general, boys spend about an hour more a day with media than girls do, and it's almost completely to do with console video gaming. Hmm. So, I mean, there's little differences. Girls are a little more into music than boys. Girls are a little more into social networking than boys. Girls are way more into texting than boys, and we don't really count texting as media use, but just in terms of their use of these gadgets and new technologies and stuff. And for whatever reason, girls love the casual gaming, but the console gaming has not taken off with girls.
What about low-income families? Because we mentioned at the outset that it is a greater problem for many of them, for kids from low-income families. Kevin, why is that?
Well, part of it is because of access. And when I say access, I mean access to the technology as well as access to an adult or someone to lead them through how to use that technology. So, for example, you may find that with lower income children that the technology is used more of as a babysitter, and so they're sat down in front of a computer or an iPad or a mobile device, and they spend that time watching television or watching movies or playing games. And so what they're not getting is that additional knowledge and access to what the opportunities are with that particular technology. So instead of just using the iPad or the tablet to watch a video, well, maybe use it to do something that's more interactive and more educational. So what we're finding or what we're seeing is that this gets to the New York Times article where it talks about wasted time. Mm-hmm. And we see that typically underserved and lower income minority kids tend to waste more time because of that lack of supervision and that lack of intervention from someone who can help them direct the use of that technology.
And that also brings us to the so-called app gap, right, which has become a factor particularly for low-income kids.
Yes. This whole notion of now you have a device that gives you access to hundreds of thousands and even millions of apps. Well, that's great on the surface, but how do we know which ones are good? How do we know which ones we should use for a particular situation? And so I always think about, you know, when we had television and we didn't have that many stations and everybody would go and get TV Guide to know what was on. Well, now, if you think about it, there's no like TV Guide for apps, and not just what the apps are, but how to use them and which ones are more useful in a particular situation.
And Vicki, is it likely then that, let's say, you know, kids and families who have, you know, college-educated parents might be, if they're going to be using apps, might be using an app that is more educationally oriented than, you know, just doing something that's kind of time-wasting fun?
Well, you know, it's possible, but I would differ with Kevin a little bit on this in that from what I have seen about how kids from different socioeconomic groups use computers, for example, there actually isn't that big of a difference, at least in the broad strokes. So kids from all different income groups are using their computers mainly for the same thing. They spend about the same time each day using it for schoolwork, which is about 16 minutes a day. And they all spend about the same amount of time using it for social networking, for listening to music, for watching TV online, for watching YouTube videos, and so on. So there may well be differences if you drill down even deeper in terms of the quality of the content that kids from different socioeconomic groups are accessing. But if you look at it from the very big picture, all kids are using their computers mostly for entertainment.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being entertained, and a lot of it, the entertainment content that they're accessing may also be educational or of other value to them, but that's just the reality of what kids are doing with computers.
There's a lot of time being wasted regardless, and I just want to follow up on something, Vicki. Did you say 16 minutes for schoolwork?
Yeah, that's the average of 16. In a typical day, about a third of kids will use their computer for schoolwork. Two-thirds of kids will use their computer for entertainment. They spend about 16 minutes a day on average using a computer for schoolwork and about 2.5 hours a day using it for entertainment. And I think, you know, this is something that's been pretty consistent over the 10 years that we've studied this. And I was very surprised when we first began seeing how little the computer was used on average for schoolwork. And I think that's kind of the big point from the New York Times article is this, that for all of the work we have put into narrowing the digital divide, since 1999, the amount of time that lower-income youth spend using a home computer for schoolwork has gone up by 7 minutes a day.
Wow.
The amount of time that they spend using the computer for entertainment has gone up by more than 2 hours a day.
And Kevin, I was going to ask you about that. In fact, let me just, for our listeners' sake, say that we've been referencing a New York Times article that came out about a month or so ago about wasting time is the new divide in the digital era, and there are lots of examples there of exactly what we're talking about. Kevin, we're about to take a break, but very quickly, doesn't this fly in the face of the whole idea of greater access?
Yes. Well, when we think about greater access, we also need to think about what comes with that and how we can use that access. What are we having access to? And mm-hmm. So I think now we need to begin to look at the content that's available and the ways in which we use this this technology in our everyday lives mm-hmm. and learning.
Well, we have much more to talk about. What is the role of parents in all of this? And lots of other things related to children and the use of screen time. If you are a parent, if you are living this right now, you've got some questions for our guests. We'd love to hear from you at 888-477-9499. Talking about kids and technology when Radio Times comes back.
Take Us Home supports WHYY. A group of Ethiopian Jews is waiting in Ethiopia for a chance for a new life in Israel. Many have waited for 10 years or more, living in mud huts with no water or electricity. Fukade and his wife are finally told that the wait for their family is over. But if they go, they must leave their adopted son, Worku, behind. Take Us Home is a new documentary film by Eileen LeBlanc, premiering at Philadelphia Independent Film Festival, Thursday, June 21st at 6 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church on Chestnut Street.
This is Jeff Bundy, WHYY's Director of Member Relations. WHYY's fiscal year ends on June 30th. The last 12 months have seen the first anniversary of our Newsworks Tonight program and the 25th anniversaries of Radio Times and Fresh Air. Now is the time to lay the groundwork for the next fiscal year and beyond. I hope that you'll consider making an end of fiscal year donation to WHYY before June 30th at whyy.org. Thanks.
He's made a name for himself on the Steve Harvey Morning Show with hilarious prank phone calls that seem as natural as can be. But comedian Thomas Miles says that success can be a double-edged sword.
The hard part is to keep hitting home runs, and it's hard.
We think Nephew Tommy will knock it out of the park. He kicks off our Make Me Laugh summer series next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
You're listening to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We are talking about children and screen time, and according to some recent studies, way too much screen time, and perhaps not enough time spent on educational pursuits and other things. We have been talking with Kevin Clark, who is the director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity, and a professor of instructional technology at George Mason University. Vicki Rideout is with us as well. She is president of VJR Consulting, which is a media research and social marketing firm focused on children and health. We would love to hear from you, your questions and comments for our guests. Perhaps you have got children who are right in this age group who are spending a lot of time, screen time in one way or another. We'd love to hear from you at 888-477-9499. Vicki, what is the impact to these children, you know, physically and mentally from that much screen time? I mean, you've got to think that there's maybe a lot less physical activity going on and that can have consequences. You know, kind of what's the long term for these children?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, one thing is while you kind of look at these numbers and think, how is it possible that kids are spending this much time with media? And surely that's not happening with my kids. But when you look at it, a lot of the time that they're using these media, they're doing other things at the same time. So it's not, you know, they might be getting dressed, getting ready for school, eating breakfast, they have the music on, they have the TV on in the background, they're riding the bus to school, they're listening to music or playing a game on their cell phone. So that's how they have this much time. Media, the time that kids spend with media has been linked to a number of negative health outcomes for kids. It's linked to a poor academic performance. It's linked with obesity. Kids get exposed to a lot of violent or sexual content in some of the media that they consume. So I think there is definitely cause for concern, especially when the time spent with media is reaching such incredible number of hours per day.
And Kevin, what about the whole idea of the mental multitasking that Vicki talked about, said that, okay, they're doing multiple things, or maybe they're even working two technologies at the same time. Does that have an effect, just sort of having a divided mind where you're not entirely focused on anything?
Well, on one hand, it's actually just how things are. And not just with kids. I mean, adults do it all the time. We go into meetings and we sit there with our Blackberries and we check our messages while someone's talking, while mm-hmm. we're, you know, taking notes. And so I think in the 21st century, we live in a multitasking society. Now, on the flip side of that, I think it is helpful for students to be able to, for children to be able to disconnect and for them to be able to spend time when they can reflect and time when they can just think and do nothing. And I think there's less of that being done. It's because when you tack on the overscheduling that is talked about with kids, along with the media, kids don't have a lot of downtime. They don't have a lot of time just to play, to imagine, and to even socialize with their friends in a face-to-face basis.
Well, I think you've raised a great concern for a lot of people, that are we raising a generation of children who are maybe even afraid to have a real face-to-face conversation with someone because they're so used to communicating electronically. And just the idea of stillness, of, as you said, taking time to just think, you know, to relax, to do something where they're completely unplugged. I think that's a concern for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know, to add on top of that, this whole notion of being aware of one's surroundings and having children be able to venture out, take walks, go on hikes, and see the natural world around them. That's another thing that I think is going by the wayside, because our heads are down looking at our devices instead of looking up at the beauty of nature and the surroundings of our communities.
Yeah, so if you're going to take a walk, you have to do it without the, you know, iPhone or the Droid or or whatever
do.
It is.
Please do.
Whatever it's going to be that has you checking your text messages and your emails at the same time. And certainly that's a concern for adults as well. We have a number of people who would like to talk with both of you, so let's go to the phones to Drexel Hill and welcome Christine to our conversation. Hi, Christine.
Hi, how are you? I'm a first-time caller. Love your show. This is something that I'm very concerned about. I have four children ranging in age from 12 to 20, so I feel like I've hit it right in the center here. But I think a lot of times the schools can be at fault. My kids go to a private Catholic school in Drexel Hill, and there just seems to be such a big push that, you know, we have the notebooks, we have this, we have that, whereas I think the children, I see the difference from my 20-year-old to my 12-year-old. The younger one doesn't seem to have the same skills in being able to take notes, being able to write down his assignments. Oh, I'll just go check it on the computer. And I think sometimes that might be something that his brain is missing in a developmental stage. And I worry about him in the future being able to just sit, listen, and to comprehend things that way. And I think sometimes the schools are just so keyed up on computers that we miss the basics.
Thank you, Christine, for that call. Vicki, what do you say to that?
I think it's a really important concern that kids need to be able to stop and focus and think deeply and concentrate when that's called for. So the multitasking is great some of the time and being able to juggle lots of things, but we also need to be able to think originally, think creatively, and to spend time to delve into a subject deeply. And that's what I, you know, hope will not be lost with this generation.
Well, and Kevin, you are in the education business, mm-hmm. and certainly you work with young people with technology. What do you say to that concern that, you know, perhaps schools are inadvertently maybe causing kids to just rely too heavily on technology?
Well, schools are in a position where they are being asked to introduce content to large numbers of students. Now, if they chose to do that without using technology as one of their tools, then I think on the flip side, they would be criticized. So I think what we have to do and what schools need to do is to begin to use technology to help ascertain some of those basic skills. But we live in an information age, and so asking a child to flip through a dictionary might not be the most efficient use of their time as opposed to having them look at an online dictionary. I do agree that kids need to know how to actually physically write. You know, I force my kids to still write thank you notes. And so I think there are some instances where we do need to continue to go old school, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I think that technology has some really great capabilities that we can expand upon and to help our kids in this information age.
And, you know, while we're on this... Oh, go ahead, Vicki. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to just jump in there and say, you know, I don't mean to be reflexively anti-media, and including, like, as an educational tool, interactive media has a lot of aspects to it that are really, really useful. And so, you know, you can create an interactive program that can be scaled to the capabilities of the individual child. It can be scaled to their particular interests. It can move ahead as they learn and slow down when they're having trouble with a particular aspect of what they're trying to learn. So I think that there are a lot of terrific uses for media in the educational context. I think that what we're talking about is really what Kevin said at the very beginning, which is that we've got these 21st century tools that are, for the most part now, still being used just to consume 20th century entertainment content.
Well, I think, you know, you've brought up a couple of interesting points. And before we move on to some other things, Kevin, I just want to talk about what you're doing in the way of helping young people to sort of redirect their energies around technology. And what you're doing with kids on Saturday mornings there at George Mason sounds like a really innovative kind of thing.
Yes. Here at George Mason, we run a game design program where we teach middle and high school students how to design educational games using every the state of the art gaming tools. And the reason we have chosen to focus on that is because of some of the stats that Vicky cited, in that kids spend a lot of time playing and consuming media. And we wanted to have kids understand that in addition to consuming media, you can also create media. And so there are higher level thinking skills that are involved when you have to make a game as opposed to just sitting down and playing a game. And so we use it as a way to get students to understand the aspect of creation as opposed to consumption, and also to get students from traditionally underserved communities interested in STEM disciplines and STEM careers.
And it sounds like they're embracing it.
Very much so, very much so. We get an upwards of 50 to 60 students who choose to show up on a Saturday morning and write video game code or create video games. So we're very pleased.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Yardley and bring Laura into our conversation. Hi, Laura.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have to agree with a lot of the things that have been said. I don't think we as educators, and I happen to be an educator, are utilizing technology as much as we should be. You know, it doesn't surprise me that statistics show that kids are only, 6 minutes using it to complete homework?
16,
that doesn't
believe
surprise me,
yeah.
Because I don't see our teachers requiring a lot of online activity from their students. You know, the submission of work, correspondence back and forth. Like somebody said earlier, there are a lot of old school kind of paper and pencil activities rather than the expectation that you're going to be doing this electronically. That's the expectation. That was just my comment.
Well, Laura, thanks for your call. Vicky, Kevin, any thoughts about the point that Laura raised?
Well, for me, one of the big issues is assessment, and we put a lot on teachers, and we want them to do to work miracles in the classroom, and most of them do. And when, even in instances where technology is used in innovative ways, the issue of, well, okay, how do you now know that having students create that video game, how does that translate into them getting a good score on that standardized math test? And so I think, you know, that's also a huge challenge in having the assessment measures be consistent with the methods that we use in the classroom.
Well, we've been talking a lot about educators here, but I think it's important to not underestimate the role of parents in all this. And let me just take a moment quickly to invite our listeners to join us as we talk about children and screen time, how much is too much, and what are some of the side effects. 888-477-9499 is the number. Kevin, I don't think you can underestimate the responsibility or the influence of parents as well, just in terms of helping children manage the way they use digital media, correct?
Correct. Parents are the gateways, the mentors, the facilitators of technology in the home. And I think it's important that we help parents to understand how technology can be used, what types of technology are more suitable for their kids. I spend a lot of time just with, let's use television as an example. I have two kids, and when they were younger, I watched every single television show that they watched because I wanted to have a sense of what they were watching. So when I said, you can't watch that, I could give them a reason, and I could say, well, did you ever think about watching this particular show? So parents, I think, are in a unique position where they can not only work with their child to help them to use technology in the home, but they can also work with the teachers and to begin to create that bridge between what happens in school and what happens in the home.
And there's also, Vicky, the issue of educating parents, right? Because many parents may not have, you know, either the savvy or the time to get themselves familiarized with all that's out there.
That's right. And, you know, Kevin mentioned earlier that there's no TV guide for apps. And I want to actually point out a resource that is out there for parents that kind of comes close to that, which is an organization called Common Sense Media. And they have a website at commonsense.org. And what they do is they actually do rate apps as well as things like TV shows and books and movies and all kinds of media for kids from a common sense perspective, not from a kind of an ideological viewpoint. They'll let parents know this is, you know, the amount of sexual content or violent content, or these are the kind of messages about girls, or this is, you know, they just give you a sense of what's in the media in each individual show or app, including they are just starting up some ratings about the educational potential of various apps. So it can be a good resource for parents to look at.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Common Sense Media is an excellent resource, and I use it also. I'm sorry I didn't mention it, but you're right, Vicki. That's an excellent, excellent resource.
So parents do have a place to go. Vicki, what was the web address again for that?
CommonSense.org.
Okay, great sort of clearinghouse, it sounds like, for parents to get some just some background on what exactly their kids are doing and what content is, and they can it'll help them make some decisions for themselves.
Exactly, and I do want to say that I think parents are so critically important here, and one of the most important things that parents can do is watch their own media habits.
Yes, indeed.
So how much TV are you watching? Are you leaving the TV on in the background all of the time? What kind of message is that sending? Is the TV on during meals at your home? Is how much time are you spending on the computer or on your BlackBerry? Are you encouraging your kids to use media so that you can go off and get something done? Are you creating enough other options for your kids besides media use? Are you setting some limits? Do you have a TV and a video game player in your 10-year-old's bedroom? If so, you might want to rethink that. So I think there's a lot that parents can look at about themselves and just kind of do a little check-in as to what the media environment is like that they're creating in their home.
And then there's just talking with your kids. One of our callers had left a message asking about the amount of time that is spent texting and sort of the social impact of texting and tweeting and posting things on Facebook as opposed to having face-to-face conversations with people. And, you know, that's
absolutely
an area that, you know, parents may be able to model what that's like to have a conversation.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the things that a lot of parents are starting to get concerned about with their kids is they take the kids to a family function, maybe it's somebody's birthday party or something like that, and suddenly they realize the kids are all sitting in their separate corners or even sitting on the couch together, but they've all got their heads down. They're not talking to one another. They're just doing something on their own device. And so I think parents are beginning to realize they've got to do more to nurture their kids' comfort and ability at being able to talk to kids their own age and to adults who they're related to and to new people that they're meeting and so on.
Yeah, there's this whole idea of being alone together where, you know, whether it's a bunch of children or even probably in some cases families where we're all in the same room, but everybody's occupied with their own screen. Kevin?
Yeah, and I think this has other implications. When we look at innovation and moving forward in terms of the workplace, we know that collaboration and the ability to work on a team and communicate and work with others is hugely important. And so I think the sooner we begin to help our children learn how to communicate and work with not only their peers but adults, I think it'll be to their advantage.
We are talking about screen time and children and some of the astounding numbers in terms of the hours that kids are spending with assorted kinds of digital media and what are the side effects from all of that. We'd love for you to join in our conversation at 888-477-9499 when Radio Times comes right back.
Many gardeners love the idea of growing their own lavender. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal what this sensuously scented perennial needs to survive, and perhaps even thrive. Plus, answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
Yeah. On the next Fresh Air, Anne-Marie Slaughter talks about her new Atlantic Magazine cover story, Why Women Still Can't Have It All. She left her position as the State Department's Director of Policy Planning to spend more time with her children. She says if we truly believe in equal opportunity for all women, some things at the workplace and in society have to change. Join us. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. How did London win this summer's Olympics? Well, for one thing, they turned traffic lights green when visiting committee members drove up so they'd see no congestion. Also, rereading the classics, starting with Somerset Maugham's Of Human Bondage and The Razor's Edge. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscoane. We're talking about some studies that indicate that children ages 8 to about 18 are spending an enormous amount of time with digital media, be it cell phones or iPods or iPads or televisions, any number of things. And the numbers are anywhere from 7.5 hours a day up to as much as 11 hours a day. Sometimes kids are using multiple platforms at the same time. And we're talking about what are the effects of that and what do parents and educators and the rest of us need to know to be able to address that effectively. We've been talking with Kevin Clark, who's the director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity. He's a professor of instructional technology at George Mason University. And Vicki Rideout is president of VJR Consulting. It's a media research and social marketing firm that is focused on children and health. And so we've been talking about, the role of educators, the role of parents, and I do want to take a moment and invite our listeners to join us if you've got a question or a comment. 888-477-9499. And in fact, there are a number of people who want to talk with you, so let's go straight to Downingtown and Sharon. Welcome, Sharon, to Radio Times.
Hi. It was funny, in our neighborhood, we have a neighborhood of 74 houses, so there's a ton of kids. And my kids grew up listening to me talk about growing up in suburban Philly, where we played street hockey every day and hit the bat and baby in the air and 3 feet off the ice and all these games he'd never heard of. And so, but he was chafing to play outside, but nobody would come. And so we were trying to figure out how we could get this going in the neighborhood. And I said, well, how about if on Thursday afternoon you and Pete, the neighbor, just stand out in the court and play something and see if you can get critical mass that way. And we'll send out an email to all the parents and say, look, Thursday afternoon in our court is outside play. And so the first day, we had like 20 kids show up, which was really exciting. They stood in my front yard and argued for like 15 minutes on the boundaries of the playing field. And then everybody lined up, and here they didn't even know what game they were going to play. Some people thought they were setting up to play football, and some people thought they were setting up to play baseball. And it just completely blew my mind that these kids have no sense of how to throw a pickup game.
Wow.
And so I think it really is on parents to sit down and help the kids figure out that initial steps to get the ball rolling, even if it's something as simple as just saying, Thursday's going to be the day. Because otherwise, kids just invite each other over to play video games, and that's all they ever do.
Well, Sharon, thank you for that. Boy, playing outside, what a concept. And Vicki, what about this idea of just, look, it takes us 15 minutes to establish some ground rules and figure out what we're playing to begin with?
Well, they'll get the hang of it, won't they? I mean, that was the first time. And bravo to Sharon. I mean, it's just little things like that, like just making an effort, making a decision that you're going to make an effort to create the opportunity for kids to do something different. And I just think that is, we need a lot of little steps like that.
Yeah, taking the initiative. Mm-hmm. We'll go to New York next, and Hallie. Welcome, Hallie, to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter goes to the school in New York City. She's in college, and she's 20 years old. She was listening to her iPod and texting her brother, and she stepped off 8th Avenue and stepped into the bike lane, and there was a bike messenger going the wrong way in the bike lane and hit her.
Mm.
And I've told her a number of times that when she's on her iPod, she's, she's not aware of a lot of things in New York City, and she can be a victim.
Mm.
But here she was. She was really lucky, and I'm hoping it was a wake-up call, and she really lucked out that she didn't need stitches or anything like that.
Mm. Well, thanks for sharing that, Hallie. That's a warning to parents and to children as well, Kevin, isn't it?
Yeah, and to adults. I mean, how many times do you cross the street and you see someone checking their email as they're walking across the street? Again, you know, with these devices comes a responsibility, and we have to model to our children how these devices are to be used. So, are we driving and checking our email, and then our kids see us doing that, and they think it's okay? Are we spending the time when we give them these devices and say, look, I'm giving you this, but here's when you can use it, here's when you should not use it. We don't just throw the car keys at a 16-year-old and say, have at it. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, these devices, if misused, can have detrimental effects, as Hallie's daughter experienced. You know, thank goodness she's okay, but we have to help our children understand that you have to be attentive.
Absolutely. We'll go to Great Valley next. And Margie, welcome, Margie, to Radio Times.
Hi. Yes, my comment was that we watch TV only on the weekends, and oftentimes the weekend comes around and, you know, we all forget, you know, that's available to us. But, you know, we have that option. But going back to the issue of technology in the schools, I wanted to say that is not an important thing to me. If the teachers include it as part of the curriculum, is great, but if they don't do it, that's fine. I do believe that paper and pencil activities are just fine, especially in the developmental years, that they need that kind of, they need that. And I don't, you know, now technology is so easy to, it's become easier to learn and understand, that I think that as the kids grow up, they're going to learn it, and they're going to learn it quickly. And so I'm not worried about them doing it in school. I think it's important that during this time that they learn to listen without having pictures, you know, that they learn to write without, you know, with forming ideas in their head without having a constant electronic stimulation to do that. Hmm. That was my comment.
All right. Thank you, Margie, for your call. Kevin or Vicki, any comments?
Well, I agree completely that I think some of this key skills are going to be to learn how to be a good listener and to learn how to think creatively and have original thoughts. And I think technology in school or at home can be used in ways that stimulate thought and creativity or that don't. And so I think there's lots of different types of media out there on all of the different platforms. And the key is for us to continue to try to create really good quality media for kids, to be able to direct kids toward that good quality media, and then to limit the amount of time overall that they spend with media so that they're in lots of other activities as well, whether it's just out watching the butterflies or talking to another person.
We'll go to, I'm sorry, Kevin, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
We'll go next to Chad's Ford and to Whitney. Hi, Whitney, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, how are you today? Great show. It's interesting. For me, I think it all comes down to whether or not these things are looked at as tools versus toys. For example, there's a great teacher in our middle school locally who actually uses Skype so she can have kids attend class even when they're at home sick, if they're well enough to Skype in. And, you know, that's a great use because they don't lose class time. They can still get their homework done, and then they don't end up behind afterwards. I've got kids who have IEPs because they have awful handwriting, so using iPads as their computer in school has been a real godsend, as well as keeping them organized and together. So, you know, the big debate in our school district is always about bringing your own devices, who has them, who doesn't, how do we balance the good stuff, but making sure that it's not all about the gamification of everything. And I'm really interested in this because I wrote a book on differentiated instruction, which means, you know, teaching to every kid's learning style. So unlike the person from Great Valley who's like, I think they should sit there with a pencil and paper and just listen, that's one skill, but not every kid learns that way. And I think we have to keep that in mind while we're having this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Whitney, thanks for your call.
Yeah, and
you know, that is really such a good point. If I could jump in there for a second, is that there are kids with special needs for whom we're beginning to see that some media devices can be really helpful. I think it's a really exciting area to look at. I'm looking forward to seeing what the research is. I have heard stories about autistic kids, for example, and kids with other special needs for whom various computer programs and for whom iPads in particular and tablet devices have been really helpful. So I think it's going to be a really interesting field to watch.
And that's a great point, Vicki. And I also think, you know, Whitney's first comment was, you know, the difference between tools and toys. And I think when we go back and we look at what schools are doing, we need to actually have a focus on using the technology as a tool instead of, well, we have it, let's just use it no matter what. And I think helping teachers through professional development and other activities to utilize technology as tools is hugely important. You know, one aside in terms of accessibility, there's a center here at George Mason, the Helen Keller Center for Human Disabilities, and one of their researchers showed me the iPad, and apparently the iPad is one of the most accessible in terms of persons with disabilities devices. And she showed me, you know, how you could do voice commands, how you could do tab in terms of accessing apps. And it's just a huge opportunity for technology to be an aid to persons with disabilities.
Great point. We'll go next to Ole, Pennsylvania, and welcome Jennifer to our conversation. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My friend's 11-year-old, we just realized last week, can't read a clock. Everything's digital on his phone, so he's had no need to learn how to read a face of a clock. So I took that information to work, which is a university I work at, and I found out a freshman friend of mine who's going to school at my university, she can't read a clock either. Just kind of mind-blowing how this technology is hampering the student's learning, I think. And I'll take this off the air. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Jennifer. Have either of you seen that phenomenon, kids who can't tell time from a regular clock?
Well, in my kids' school, they're actually still teaching it both ways in terms of digital and analog. But again, as technology moves forward, there are going to be some things that you know, students aren't going to need to know how to do or may miss along the way.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing some of the just little side effects that people didn't think of that, you know, we see sometimes from just the advent of so much digital technology. We'll see if we can squeeze in one more call. We'll go to Boyertown and Jay. Hi, Jay. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. I've been teaching over 25 years, so I've seen the birth of technology in the classroom and the positives and negatives of it. Can definitely tell you it's a two-edged sword. There's a lot of beauty in it, and there's a lot of negatives, especially now. I've noticed in the last 2 years, students are definitely addicted to technology. They don't want to let go of their cell phone, and a lot of school districts are going to one-on-one where each student has a laptop. So there's a lot of issues with that. Good students can handle it, and they're responsible for it. And the students that are not so motivated, less than average students or average students, are not handling the responsibility at all. And I've also noticed that students cannot learn or don't want to learn with traditional means anymore. They don't want to listen to a teacher. They don't want to hold a piece of paper in their hand, and they don't want to read a textbook. It all has to be on the screen. So much to the point where I've even considered as a teacher recording my demonstrations and my lectures on my laptop and passing that out to all the students that they could listen to the lecture or the demonstration individually on their own laptop.
Thinking maybe they'd pay more attention to you if you were on a screen as opposed to in person.
Yes, they have a lot of trouble. They have a lot of trouble paying attention now to just looking across the room at a blackboard or paying attention to a person talking in front of them. So now they want to, it has to be on the screen in front of them.
Well, Jay, I appreciate the points that you've brought up. I want to stop you right there for time's sake in case our guests want to add anything to what you've said. But again, Vicki and Kevin, you know, we're seeing this phenomenon of, you know, different ways of learning, kids who tend to go one direction or the other in terms of how they learn, and in some cases, over-dependence on technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think technology, for all that we say in terms of the pitfalls and cautions, technology is a tool that can be used to address a variety of learner preferences, interests, and needs. And so from that standpoint, I would encourage us to continue to investigate the ways to exploit the technology to meet those varied needs.
Hmm. And I feel like if kids are excited about learning through media, then that's great. If they're excited and engaged and they learn effectively, then fantastic. Let's meet them there. What I'm more concerned about is the amount of time that's spent using media that is not about education and learning, and what could be done perhaps more productively with that time. And so I do think that, you know, we do need to move forward, and if this is the tool that kids love, then great. Let's use it as a tool.
Well, and Vicki, one thing that I wanted to ask regarding parents and sort of managing this from their end, at least, it can be difficult to do that. When you think about older children, you think about Facebook and Twitter and some of these sort of social networking sites. Now we're getting into a different area, and that can be a challenge for a parent to try to manage in terms of keeping an eye on it or even being able to shut down an account in some cases.
Absolutely. It's as we have mobile media, every child who has a smartphone has the world in their hands, literally. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to be communicating with lots of other individuals through social sites. The parent may or may not know who they are, to be playing social games with people from all across the world of every different age, to be looking at all different kinds of websites. They have access to just everything right there in their hands, whether it's video content or interpersonal content. And so I think that's where digital literacy and digital citizenship come into play, training kids, teaching them, giving them the tools they need to be smart users of this media, and also we're setting limits so that comes into play, so that we still have a generation who can communicate face-to-face and look somebody in the eye and have a conversation with them.
And Kevin Clark, in 15 seconds or less before we go, your advice to parents who are listening and wanting to help get some parameters around this.
Try and make media a family issue where you talk about it. It's out in the open. It's not hidden away in people's bedrooms. And that, as Vicki said, you help kids learn how to use this media in their everyday lives.
Well, we want to make the point, too, that for parents who are interested in that Common Sense Media, we understand the website is commonsensemedia.org if you'd like to get a little more information on that. I want to take a moment to thank our guests for being with us. Kevin Clark from George Mason University. Vicki Rideout has been with us as well from JVR. Thank you both so much for just helping us to navigate this and giving us a better sense of what's going on with our children and digital media. It was great talking with you both.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you too. Thanks so much.
Our engineer has been Bob Alls, and our producers are Debbie Builder, Dennis Devine, Patty McMahon, and Susan Greenbaum. And I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. You've been listening to Radio Times.